convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls because, well, we have with us right now on the line from Raleigh, North Carolina, our good friend, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Dr. Cuddy, thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we were going to talk today about what we talked about the other evening, and that was really somewhat going into, what was it, actually the investigation now?
Yes.
All right, you pick up the story from there. Certainly, this is a fascinating amount of disinformation and confusing information, and the people who really know what's going on aren't allowed to testify because they have an agenda, and that is not to inform or to reveal what happened on 9-1-1, but to conceal it from the American public. I think they're doing a great job.
That's the objective. They're doing a really wonderful job. First of all, because of your introduction, let me just add a separate but relevant point along the line of that overall theme about what they want us to know or don't want us to know. This past week, there was released a Secret Service document. One is advised to take this with some caution, but yet it is being reported by the AP, and it has to do with Oklahoma City, and somebody may say, well, what's that got to do with 9/11? But we've talked in the past about how there could be a connection between John Doe number 234 and so forth involved in the Oklahoma City bomb, and bombing is directly involved also with the attacks of September 11th. And so what's interesting is the government in the case of Oklahoma City seemed really determined to have this entirely about Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols. And Nichols, of course, now is undergoing trial there at state charges. He's already been convicted on federal charges. But interestingly enough, this past week was released something which is supposed to be a Secret Service document dated May 1 of 1995. And what it is a timeline of the day, Wednesday, April 19th, 1995, when the attack occurred. And I'll just read this one paragraph. It's a timeline. Some of it is fairly boring. It's just standard, you know, here's what happened at 10:25, here's what happened at 10:27, so forth and so on. And then it gets to this about midway through the document. It says, a witness to the explosion named Grossman claimed to have seen a pale yellow Mercury car with a Ryder truck behind it pulling up to the federal building. Mr. Grossman further claimed to have seen a woman on the corner waving to the truck. McNally, he's one of these officials here, McNally noted that this fact is significant due to the fact that the security video shows, now remember that, it shows, so they're already looking at these security videos, shows the Ryder truck pulling up to the federal building and then pausing 7 to 10 seconds before resuming into a slot in front of the building. It is speculated that the woman was signaling the truck when a slot became available. And then it goes on. But what's relevant about this is not only does it show John Doe number 2 and so forth, it shows Jane Doe. It also shows that early on they're looking at a security video, which we really haven't heard much about heretofore.
And in fact, they won't let any of us common folks see that. They're concealing those videos. They've never been released for the public. And the question is, if there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it? We'll be back here in just a moment with our good friend, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. With us today is Dr. Dennis Cuddy from Raleigh, North Carolina, and he has worked in, taught at the university level. He is, was an official in the Reagan administration's Department of Education, and certainly one of my favorite guests and one of the best researchers we have in the country. And we carry a number of his books, Secret Records Revealed, Now is the Dawning of the New Age, New World Order, Cover Up, the chronology of the education to the New World Order, NEA Power Grab, A Road to Socialism, and so many other books that all available through Radio Liberty. You'll really want to actually get the list and go through those books. Every one of them is so important. But Dr. Cuddy has been talking about a newly released statement from the Secret Service, a timeline of what happened in Oklahoma City. Now, why is that important? Well, I'm going to let him develop that idea, because there are many people who feel if we'd ever gotten the truth about what happened on the morning there of April 19th, 9 years ago, why we would not be where we are today. So pick up the story there, Dennis.
Well, I don't want to spend too much time on it. I'll just mention a couple of things. This shows not only that there was a John Doe number two and so forth, but a Jane Doe. It shows that they already had the security video. It not only shows that the FBI had it, it shows that the Secret Service is finding out about it. It also begs the question of why it wasn't presented, given that the judge in the charges said, and others concerned or others involved. So they already knew. If there are others involved, why did they deliberately say, well, no, this is just about McVeigh and Nichols? Why is Louis Free even now saying we are convinced that all those involved have been brought to justice whenever they ask him, you know, at the 9/11 Commission hearings about this? Also, the paragraph I was reading right after it, I'll just read this one more thing. It goes on. It says, a catering truck driver who was traveling east just prior to the explosion noticed the Ryder truck in front of the federal building and saw two men leaving the vicinity of the truck and crossing the street heading for a brown pickup truck. The catering truck driver privately ID'd McVeigh. When questioned about his accuracy in detail, the driver admitted that he was, well, we won't get it, that's his personal thing, and that he was checking out McVeigh. But the point is, there's two. It's not just McVeigh, and we've heard that Terry Nichols was elsewhere, so this has got to be the John Doe number two. And so there's several questions that I mentioned just come to the fore. And we see once again that...
Hold that thought, Dennis. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this afternoon, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And he's, we're going to be talking today about the 9/11 Commission investigation. But Dr. Cuddy is talking about a recently released Secret Service chronology of what happened this morning. And, of course, they're talking about the second people that were involved, the John Doe 2, and then there apparently was a Jane Doe 2. They've known this all along, but you see, us common folks... we can't understand the implications that the elite, they have a wonderful plan for us, this new, wonderful new world order, they're going to rule, and the return to serfdom. So they've done everything they could to conceal this, and they use all sorts of secrecy laws. Why, even much of the information about what happened at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941 is still classified, because they don't want the Japanese to find out what we knew ahead of time. Or maybe they don't want the American people to know. But Oklahoma City is still such a terrible crime. Why are they concealing the truth? And, of course, if you've read the book, Others Unknown, which was written by Stephen Jones, and he wrote two books. The second one was the Oklahoma City bombing conspiracy. He will tell you there in that book that when Stephen Jones opened his defense of Timothy McVeigh, he made this statement that McVeigh had written to his sister Jennifer and said he was part of a secret special forces unit involved in illegal activity. It's amazing that the press never picked that up. The prosecutor never picked it up. And unless you can find a copy of the book someplace or you want a copy of the page, we can get it for you. You will never hear this. Timothy McVeigh claimed he was part of a secret special forces unit involved in illegal activity. I'm sure you've heard that, Dennis, haven't you?
Yes, and picking up a couple of points before we get to the 9/11, why would they do something like that or not let us know this? Well, a lot of the information and tracking goes, and I'm not saying this is the sole reason, but a lot of it goes to LOM City, where you find that there's these, supposedly these white supremacist guys, but when you look into it, you find out that they had some FBI connections themselves, some of them. Plus, the governor, Frank Keating, his brother, Martin Keating, wrote in advance a book about the subject of a group of individuals, a terrorist named McVeigh, a different spelling, but same name, McVeigh, blowing up a federal building in Oklahoma City. And it was interesting in the introduction of it, actually, the dedication. If you read it, it's very, very strange. He's dedicating it to the fellows of the Golden Circle, and a lot of sort of esoteric language in there. And when you look at who he's thanking for it, he's saying, I'm thanking all of these contacts that I was given in the intelligence community. And so it's all of these things sort of play out that there's more to this than meets the eye.
And this was actually published before, was it written or was it published before the...
Well, it was written, I think it was, the publication date was afterwards, but yet everything in there and the publisher will say it was submitted and written before.
So isn't it interesting that the Keating's brother, and Keating was a very high official in the FBI before he became the governor there of Oklahoma, and did everything he could to suppress information about what really happened at Oklahoma City, but then they're doing everything they can to suppress what happened on 9/11 as well.
Yeah, and that brings us to the commission and the hearings. And what's interesting is, when I was looking at that, I'm very skeptical, but yet I try and say, well, let's assume that what the administration is telling is correct, and we'll get to this later, but even assuming that, I think it's clearly demonstrable that the attacks could have been prevented, even if you believe everything that you're told by the administration. But a couple of weeks ago, when Condoleezza Rice was testifying, and they were asking her about the presidential daily briefing of August 6, 2001. I was just listening, and I was going to, you know, assume that basically what she was saying was correct. And so when she talked about the PDB, this presidential daily briefing, being just basically a historical type of document, when I actually got the thing, I said, this is anything but a historical type of document. It has a lot of historical dates, historical meaning just several years ago, but any PDB, as we'll find out in a minute from a fellow who's written 40 of them, begins with sort of a historical background so as to put the whole thing in context. But once you get into the thing, and it's not very long, actually, it's only about, you know, a page and a half, actually. In there, it's talking about Ramzi Youssef, who was behind the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993, wanted to bring the fighting to America. It goes on and says Bin Laden was planning to exploit an operative's access to the U.S. to mount a terrorist strike. Goes on to say that Al-Qaeda members, including some who are U.S. citizens, had resided in or traveled to the U.S. for years, and apparently there was a support structure that could aid in attacks. That's sort of talking in the futuristic tense there. It said that a Bin Laden cell in New York was recruiting. Now, remember, this isn't past tense. It didn't say, you know, 10 years ago they recruited and they forgot about him. It says is recruiting Muslim American youth for the attacks. It mentions Bin Laden wanted to hijack U.S. aircraft. So right there we know there's the possibility of a hijacking has to be at the forefront of the mind of the administration officials, since President Bush had actually requested this PDB given to him, which was titled Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S. And then at the end, the last couple of paragraphs of it talks about the FBI has information indicating a pattern of suspicious activity. Now, this is ongoing, and it says it is consistent. It doesn't say it was. It is consistent with preparations for hijacking and other types of attacks, including recent, there's that word, recent surveillance of federal buildings in New York. And they go on and conclude by saying there are these approximately 70 full-field investigations throughout the U.S. because the CIA and FBI have gotten word in May saying that a group of Bin Laden supporters was in the U.S. planning attacks with explosives. And that's the way it ends, a very current picture. Not something that, you know, well, we found out this 10 years ago and they've, you know, become deceased or lost interest and gone away. So There was a publication recently by it's called Decoding the PDB by Larry Johnson. And this guy had worked with the counterterrorism section of the State Department. He had served in the CIA, and he's telling his own history of this, and he says he wrote 40 of these things, these presidential daily briefings, and he says this is absolute nonsense, that this is just a historical memo. And he says, obviously, the conclusion one comes to after looking at this is Bin Laden is planning to attack in the United States. And he says the question that he would ask, and he's curious as to why the administration officials didn't ask it, is what are they planning and what can we do to stop it? You and I have talked in the past that the average citizen, if you came up and told them, well, there's an attack going to be in your town, you'd say, well, you know, where and what can we do to stop it? That's the logical action. And this Larry Johnson, this fellow who's writing this, says what should have happened automatically is President Bush should have directed the department heads to report back within 1 week and ask them to dig up anything they could and on an al-Qaeda threat that might be in the near future. And the field agents would have probably, he said, found out that some Arabs were taking flight training. And they may have discovered that the Phoenix memo and Zacharias Moussaoui wanted to learn how to fly commercial airliners. And it could very well, in his opinion, have been prevented. But, you know, none of this happened, and so he's rather curious about that. And so what I did was I looked at the New York Times to see the interplay that was going on in the administration. And what you find out is that the Attorney General, John Ashcroft, according to the Times, seemed largely uninterested, is the word they use, in counterterrorism before September 11th. And what we find there is that there was a meeting back in the spring of 2001, and this fellow named Dale Watson, who we've mentioned before, and he was the former counterterrorism chief for the FBI, said, Watson said he, quote, fell off my chair, quote, when he learned that Ashcroft had failed to list combating terrorism as one of the department's priorities in a March 2001 department-wide memo. So he was very surprised, but then you find out from the same Times article that there's a different view from the spokesman for Ashcroft, and his name is Mark Carallo, or Carallo. And he says, no. Ashcroft asked over and over again if there was any evidence of a domestic threat, and he was told over and over again that there was no evidence of one. And then when push comes to shove, and that's the point I'm going to make here, is Carallo was then asked if Mr. Ashcroft had looked at the August 6th PDB. And he said no, but that would not have made any difference, Carallo says, because there was listed, quote, no specific threats, end quote. And that's what you hear over and over again by Condoleezza Rice or John Ashcroft or the Ashcroft spokesman or Dick Cheney. When you push them to the logical conclusion, you got this PDB, there's a plan to attack in the U.S., it's big, it's soon, they always come down to, well, but we didn't have the specifics. And that it's actually, if it wasn't so morbid, it's actually humorous. You get the impression that unless Osama bin Laden calls one of these people up and says, you know, next Tuesday at this street corner in this town, I'll have a truck bomb waiting, that they're incapable of even having any preventive contingency plannings for even the most obvious attacks. Now, they can't protect everywhere, but you would think that at least since the World Trade Center had been attacked back in 1993, they would have at least tried to come up with some sort of preventive contingency plans for any possible land attack or sea attack, you know, coming up the river in speedboats or whatever, or air attack.
Well, they didn't do any of these things, and what was so interesting is one of the people on the commission asked Condoleezza Rice, what was the title of the PDB? And she said, well, Bin Laden determined to strike America, but, and she tries to interrupt, and then she finally says, but just because, that doesn't mean that he was going to strike America, just because it said he was determined to strike America, he didn't say that he was going to strike America. And as I read that, I thought, you know, Condoleezza Rice should have been saying, are you going to believe me or you're going to believe your lying eyes? Well, we'll be right back here in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy here at Radio Liberty. let me tell you about some of the four tape sets we have. One special tape set is the Tuskegee Study, and it's four interviews with people who were involved with the Tuskegee Study, or at least who've gone into the background of this really most horrible of all American experimentation. We had the unique opportunity to interview a number of the men who were involved in analyzing the Tuskegee Study, a government-sponsored study where 400 black men were recruited, and they had syphilis, and of course, what they did not understand is that they were not being recruited to be treated, they were being recruited not to be treated, and the government agents did everything they could to block those men from receiving treatment for their syphilis. Call today at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's important that you understand that study so you can better understand the mentality of the men who are working behind the scenes in America today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're talking really about some of the unexplained things. If you've read Condoleezza Rice's testimony, it really is fascinating. As she says, well, yes, the title of the PDB was Bin Laden Determined to Attack America, but that doesn't mean that he was going to attack America. And, you know, it is the double talk there, the insisting that what's so obvious is not obvious, because how could you admit that they knew they were going to attack and did nothing to stop it? They didn't even put out a directive to simply order all cockpit doors locked at all times during flight. That would be the logical thing, wouldn't it? But they wouldn't even do that to protect the American people. And they knew there was going to be an attack, and there were so many other reports that were coming in immediately before that about the attack, and yet none of these were circulated among the key people in the Bush administration. You have to ask yourself, why? Go ahead, Dennis.
Well, yeah, and they just there were some pilots who had been able to have arms, but at about the same time, they were disarming pilots as well.
And taking the marshals out of the planes, because there had been a marshal program still in place, and they determined that there would be no marshals in any domestic flights. They could still have them in international flights, but not domestic flights. Why take marshals out of the planes when you're suspecting a hijacking?
If my memory serves me, when they asked her this originally, Richard Benveniste or whoever was asked her, I think she said, and this is curious, maybe your listeners don't think so, but I thought it was curious. Now remember, this PDB has been the subject of much talk for months and months and months and months and months. And there have been negotiations and, we can release some of it maybe, and very mysterious and all. But when he asked her, she said, I think it's something like Bin Laden determined to strike in the U.S. You would think that she would know what it was. I mean, it's very short, and it's been on, the subject of great discussion, but the way she's presenting it is sort of a sort of flip thing, like, that thing, I really don't remember for sure. I think it's something like, and then she's almost historical. You got the impression that she was ready for the question, and the way she answered it was to sort of dismiss it as not all that important, And so that was, I think that was perhaps a deliberate tactic that they were using to try and downplay this. Because like I said, when I heard her say that, believing her, I got the thing and I expected to see, just something that was like 10 years old or, there was this Project Bojinka, but, there was, who knew anything about that, and they had forgotten about it, and we'd rounded up everybody, purely historical. But when I read it, it was anything but purely historical. It was very current, talking about the, determined to strike now, and you got these cells and so forth. So as you just said, you would think they would do something to try to prevent it. What I try to do, as I said at the outset of the program, is even if one is charitable to these people, even if all they know is something new, that something big and soon would happen, and the reason I'm talking like this is that could happen tomorrow. This is not about something that was 2.5 years ago only. If you were to find out, if you're an administration official, any administration official, mayor of a city or something, and you find out that something, quote, big and soon is going to happen, at the very least, what you do, as I said, is try to have some plan in case there's a land, sea, or air attack. And the first thing that comes to your mind is the World Trade Center, since they tried to blow it up in 1993. And very simply, and this is one of the main points I want to make about this, is whenever they say something like that, Condoleezza Rice and the rest of them will say, well, we never knew they would use hijacked planes as missiles. And my response to that is, it's irrelevant. Now, I've told NBC, ABC, CBS, all of these people, that is irrelevant. And they seem totally disinterested. It's irrelevant because by very definition of a contingency plan is you try to develop a solution for any contingency. So regardless of whether it's a hijacked plane or a small aircraft with, terrorists with machine guns hanging out the window or a, private jet with explosives packed in it, whatever it is, and which could happen tomorrow. In fact, I think it's more likely that they will happen tomorrow rather than a hijacked commercial airliner again. What you simply do is have a military helicopter like the Apache Longbow on standby alert. Doesn't have to be by the building, doesn't have to be constantly in the air, has 30-millimeter chain guns, rockets, and missiles. That could have easily, at Fort Totten or Fort Hamilton in New York, have brought down these aircraft, and they would have been prevented from hitting those towers.
But, of course, none of the logical things were done. And we know, if you've read my March newsletter, that they were tracking the plane that was coming in to hit the Pentagon 50 miles out, 30 miles out, 10
right.
miles out. And why didn't they do anything to stop it? We'll be right back here in just a moment, here at Radio Liberty. Thank you.
you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America. It's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and this is the time I want to tell you that we carry the Berkey Light and the Big Berkey. The Big Berkey is made of stainless steel. It'll filter about 24 gallons of water a day. You pour it in the top, comes out the bottom. After it's gone through ceramic filters packed with activated carbon, works well. You can take a pond, pool, lake, river water, and it'll be potable when it comes out. And we live in uncertain times. Most people don't understand that, but you would want some means of having water. You can live without food, but you sure can't live without water. And that's one reason to have it. The other reason is you may have fluoride in your water. You can get special post filters to put down below to take out the fluoride. You may not like the taste of your water, and it tastes great when it comes out. The Big Berkey is $279, and of course, it's available in every state except California and Iowa. However, we have the Berkey Light, and the Berkey Light is made of Lexan, so you can actually see the water level, and that really is an advantage. I like that myself. And of course, the filters are not ceramic. They're we call them black Berkey filters. They actually purify the water. They do even a better job of taking out the herbicides and pesticides and the bacteria. And there's just no bacteria for all intents and purposes that will get through this, and it'll take out a lot of the fluoride, a lot of the chlorine, but it eventually loses effectiveness taking out fluoride. So you can get special post filters for the Berkey Light to take out fluoride, arsenic, and lead. So this is only $199, both of them $10 shipping. Both of them, if you buy them through us, you get a four-tape set or a video that we produce. So why don't you look at them at our website, radioliberty.com, and then seriously consider purchasing them by calling 1-800-544-8927, and you could call right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and special guest this afternoon, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and Dr. Cuddy's books. If you have not yet read them, his book on cover-up, and it goes partly into 911, and then to so many of the other cover-ups we've had. His book, Secret Records Revealed, is one of the most important books in my library. His book now is The Dawning Road to Socialism, A Chronology of Education for the New World Order, NEA Power Grab. All of these are available from Radio Liberty, and we're hoping soon to have a couple of others back in print. They've been so much demand for them, they are all to print. Now, we still have a couple of copies of his 911 prior knowledge. This is must reading for anyone who would like to know what they knew beforehand. And let me tell you that in New York City, many of the children brought their cameras to school because they wanted to see the World Trade Center come down on the 11th of September. But the FBI had no idea what was going to happen, and the CIA had no idea what was going to happen. And these are all verified stories. When Dr. Cuddy says something, you can rest assured that he's got the documentation on it, and that's why I value having him as a friend and having him on our program. So, Dr. Cuddy, you pick up the story. We were talking about Condoleezza Rice's testimony before the 911 commission and how she was doing everything to just deflect attention away from the fact that they knew ahead of time and they did nothing. And so her remark was, well, it's just because the directive said Bin Laden determined to attack America. That didn't mean he was going to attack America. How else would you interpret that? But, you know, the tragedy is there's so many Americans who like Condoleezza because she's got a nice smile, but they cannot let the American people know the truth. There is an elite in America, and they have a different worldview. and they believe that they have the right to rule, and we are to go along with them because they have a plan for us, and they know so much better what's good for you and I. And that is the antithesis of the American dream, where the power of the elite was to be limited by the chains of the Constitution. I think they've taken the chains off the elite, and now they're, of course, forging them for the populace. Go ahead, Dennis.
Okay. Well, the theme that's running through this program is we had, in the case of the Secret Service documents, they had already been looking at this video. They knew there was a John Doe number two. They knew there was a Jane Doe. This is the first we've been hearing of this, some of us anyway. Also, with as you just said, they don't want people to know the whole truth. It's a suppression of information that's going on. Robert Wright, the FBI agent from Chicago, was trying to follow the money trail. He apologized to the families of the victims, saying he believed he could have prevented these attacks if he'd been allowed to continue and follow that money trail.
But he wasn't allowed to. That was the thing. Anybody in the FBI who was trying to do a good job was stopped from doing it. And they keep saying we didn't have enough money. They had increased their funding for counterterrorism 280% from 1995 to 2001, and that's all in Richard Clark's excellent book, very readable book, Against All Enemies. So they had plenty of money. They had the people hired for counterterrorism, putting data into computers and answering telephones. They refused to allow the FBI to do what was necessary. And you have to ask yourself, why, when they knew the attack was coming, didn't they do everything they could to stop it?
Another source, we'll get down to the translators. There was a fellow who had worked for 7 years for the FBI as a translator. And he was telling them back in the spring, also in April of 2001, that there were al-Qaeda terrorists already in place in the U.S. He was getting this from a source that he had, and he said they would strike very soon and possibly within the next several months. And his the translator's name was Behrouz Sarshar, and his source of information was a fellow who was, they call him Assets, an Iranian immigrant who had worked for the former Shah of Iran's intelligence services, and the guy had been on the FBI's payroll for at least a decade, was considered pretty reliable, and he still had good contacts in Afghanistan, including within the al-Qaeda network. And so in April, the translator with this asset gave all this information to a couple of investigators for the FBI, and they were writing it all up, and they gave it to a supervisor named Thomas Frields, F-R-I-E-L-D-S, who has since left the headquarters, and when you try to ask him, he says it's too, quote, sensitive to discuss this matter. And supposedly, he's a very dedicated, solid, meticulous individual, this fellow named Frields, and sources there say he probably would have passed that information on to that fellow I mentioned earlier, that Dale Watson, who was head of counterterrorism. Now, why is Dale Watson of interest? Dale Watson's the fellow back in 1998 who was assuring Congress that, oh yeah, you know, we're on top of this. We're coordinating against terrorism with the CIA. Yeah, I know about Project Bojinka. He gave the distinct impression that they were really in charge of this. And the fellow who had brought this Iranian asset forward, and the translator, Sarshar, was encouraged to go to the 9/11 commission now by a woman named Sybil Edmonds, who was also a translator, and she had indicated the same type of information, that she had gotten to translate documents which showed in advance, prior to 9/11, that something big was going to happen. It didn't say specifically on the 11th hijacked planes would be used as missiles, but it said just about everything else. It mentioned the possibility of hijackings. It mentioned an attack coming soon. And, of course, what she has had happen to her is her information has been suppressed by basically what is, I think they she calls it, Ashcroft is using state secrets privilege, that term, quote-unquote, to get a court to place a gag order on her so that she can't talk about what she knows.
I think it's so important that our listeners understand that the 9/11 Commission has interviewed over 1,000 people, and anybody who knows what happened and knows about the government's complicity in allowing it to happen is not allowed to testify. That's what it's really all about. In fact, they spent 3 hours interviewing Sybil Edmonds and then decided not to put her on where the public could hear her story. If they asked her to testify, then she would be excluded from these government restrictions. and she could tell the truth that they knew ahead of time, but they won't allow her to testify. So it's all a cover-up. You have to understand, it's just like Pearl Harbor, where much of the information to this very day remains classified.
And so then we have the attack, because nobody did what they should have done. And so afterwards, almost immediately, you have a case of the FBI rounding up the 20 or so members of the bin Laden family, along with the Saudi royal family members, not for some sort of, you know, very deep, intensive investigation, but to get them out of the country fairly quickly. And so when Richard Clark was testifying, they asked him, you know, well, who was responsible for allowing this? And he mentioned, well, you know, former assistant FBI director Dale Watson okayed the emergency outbound flights from the Saudi nationals. And they said, well, you know, how did he do that? And Clark says, well, I believe it may have originated with White House Chief of Staff Andy Card's office. So this is a political thing that's going on, and Sybil Edmonds at least has come out with questions. See, that's the way she's getting around some of this. And she's come out with a series of about 10 questions. I'll just read one of them, she says, should be asked. She says, is it true that some of the investigations were not forwarded to counterterrorism even after 9/11 due to certain, quote, diplomatic relations, end quote, that was cited in Attorney General Ashcroft's assertion of state secret privilege? How do you justify this in light of what we experienced on 9/11? That's one of the questions she asked. And the whole connection with the Saudis has been called by Senator Charles Schumer a cover-up. Now, he originally made this statement back on July 24th of 2003, but just the other night, on April 19th, they rebroadcast part of that, that assertion about a cover-up by the administration when it comes to the Saudis. It was done on Nightline on April 19th. So the Saudis play a very important part in all of this.
In fact, and they're being protected by the Bush administration. Right. They do not want the American people to know that they were financing Al-Qaeda. Right now, we've got Sam calling from Paradise. I will ask other people not to call in, though, because I don't want too many interruptions. Sam, did you have a quick question or comment?
Yes, I would like you to please send me a Radio Liberty bumper sticker, but my question is this. Did the good doctor say that little kids came with video cameras to watch the World Trade Center come down? Could you verify that statement?
It's all covered in the book, 9/11, Prior Knowledge. And basically, yes, and he, would you like to discuss that about the children in the school there in New York City?
It wasn't a video camera. It was just a regular camera.
Regular
what happened
camera,
was the week before, on the 6th of September, a young fellow was in a heated discussion in a class in a Brooklyn school. And during the discussion, he looks out the window and points to the World Trade Center towers and says, next week those towers won't be standing, okay? So the teacher is, you know, saying, well, this is rather ominous, but she doesn't pursue it. You know, it's just a heated discussion.
Yeah.
Although she did afterwards. And so what they found out was after 9/11, the police start investigating, and they go through the neighborhood. And they're having trouble finding out who had first-hand and second-hand knowledge because the news was so pervasive. And when they went around, they found out, and I put the documentation where it is in my book, as Dr. Stan mentioned, a lot of the students brought their cameras, not video cameras, just cameras on that day to class in order to take a picture of that. It was extraordinary that many youngsters decided on that day to bring their cameras.
Okay, and the documentation is all in his book, 9/11 Prior Knowledge. What is the documentation on that, Dennis?
It's a fellow named Shapiro. He's a reporter for a newspaper in New York State, and he did a lot of digging and investigation and talking to the police around the school in Brooklyn and some of the students and others there.
Okay, Sam, if you want to, bumper sticker, just hang on, we'll give you to our producer. Okay, and the information is all there, but you're not going to get it from other sources. And so that's why we have Dr. Dennis Cuddy on with us, because he has the documentation. Believe me, lots of times I call him and say, Dennis, I want to know where you got that, and sure enough, it's in the mail for me. So go ahead with the story, Dennis.
And in case somebody's getting an idea, well, this is, you know, just Bush bashing. Let me point out that John Curry, a fellow Skull and Bones member with Bush, also has been looked at in this regard, because a Brian Sullivan, a retired special agent for the FBI for the Boston area, in May 7th of 2001, sent a letter to Curry saying that Logan Airport, where a couple of the planes took off from was ripe for jihad, a suicide operation possibly involving a coordinated attack. And Kerry just basically didn't do anything. He boasts that he sounded the alarm on terrorism years before 9/11. But I'll just read one section of the letter that Sullivan wrote. And this is May 7th, 2001, way before the attacks. He says, he's writing Kerry. He says, with the concept of jihad, do you think it would be difficult for a determined terrorist to get on a plane and destroy himself and all the passengers? Think what the result would be of a coordinated attack which took down several domestic flights on the same day. With our current screening, this is more than possible. It is almost likely, end quote. That sounds to me extremely prescient. And if Curry had acted on that, maybe the attacks could have been prevented as well.
In fact, we have a email, I mean, it was an article up on the Internet, written 2 months ahead of time by Bill Gertz of the Washington Times, and I know Dennis has a copy and we have it. We got this immediately after the 9/11 attack, and then it disappeared from the Internet forever. But it was talking about Operation Bajinka, the plan, the terrorists back in 1995, and they were going to hijack American planes, and they were going to fly them into the World Trade Center, the White House, the Pentagon, the Sears Tower in Chicago, and the Tri-America Building in San Francisco. And any of you would like to see a copy of that, we have it. But the most amazing thing is Bill Gertz forgot he ever wrote it. And when we asked him personally, he just said, I didn't write that. And I said, well, I have a copy. Oh, well, it was all wrong. I said, it was the greatest scoop of all time. But similar articles appeared in the Washington Times before the 9/11 attack. And obviously, they were getting their leaks from the CIA, so they knew it was going to happen, but they couldn't tell the American people that. We had to have an excuse to go to war. And we had to have an excuse to go to war because we had to get Osama bin Laden, because he had attacked the USS Cole, and he was responsible for killing Americans throughout the world. And how could you get the American people to go to war unless there was an incident? And they had to have an incident. The plan was already there, and that'll be covered in my latest newsletter. It was written by Richard Clark the previous October. But you had to get something to rally the people and be willing to enter into a war which the American people didn't want. Our allies would not support a preemptive strike on Afghanistan to take out bin Laden unless something happened. And something did happen on September 11th, the year 2001.
Yeah, and in case the fellow who called is listening, it was New Utrecht, Utrecht High School, where the student pointing out the window on the 6 was. Picking up on what you said about Gertz, that was on Northwest Airlines FlightAttendants.com. So the idea that nobody knew about any of this stuff, that's a rather popular website. Lots of people could have seen his description there of Project Bojinka, and on airlinebiz.com just the month before, on June 23rd, you had a Muslim reporter putting in a story where he had just interviewed Osama bin Laden and said, look, this is a race to see who will attack whom first, whether Osama will attack us or vice versa. If I could, with just a few minutes left, mention Iraq, since that's in the news a lot as well today. What you have is a situation there which I had predicted. It's inconceivable to me that if it took 600,000 soldiers to remove Saddam's forces in the first Gulf War, just remove them, get them across the border from Kuwait, that you could provide security and police an entire nation with just 150,000 soldiers. So even today in a city like Ramadi there, you don't have adequate electricity or adequate water supply. This is terribly frustrating to the Iraqis. It gives vent to various conspiracy theories, like maybe the Americans want some instability so that the governing council or whoever we turn authority over to on June 30th will say, oh, please don't leave, you know, leave 100,000 or so soldiers there. The fact that we messed up is in an actual official document called Operation Iraqi Freedom Strategic Lessons Learned that was put out by the U.S. government. And they say in there specifically that the Pentagon and State Department, their planning was not fully integrated prior to hostilities. In other words, they were basically just winging it, not having in place all the necessary supplies and so forth. The administration is putting out the word that, this is just a ragtag bunch of thugs supporting al-Sadr, the young cleric. But in the New York Times on April 8th, the article says, officials tell of broad Shiite revolt in Iraq, contradicting the White House. It's all over. It's in Fallujah and other places. And what you have now is what I think was inconceivable. About a week ago, when President Bush gave his press conference, he was talking about how important this moment was, June 30th. But yet when they asked him, well, who are we turning sovereignty over to, he said, well, I'm waiting for this U.N. envoy from Algeria named Brahimi to tell me. That's unbelievable.
Well, of course, Brahimi is a very key figure in this whole move towards world government. In fact, we have the Brahimi report in our Millennium Summit report. If you don't have it, you need to get this. That's one of our syllabuses. We're out of time. Dennis, God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us. And, you know, this is a spiritual battle, isn't it?
Yes.
And until we begin addressing that, there are spiritual forces that are drawing us into World War III, and you better understand that. God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now, most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been the secret societies. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to mention that on the 29th and 30th of May, there's going to be a conspiracy conference over in Santa Clara. They're by Great American, I'm not going to be speaking, but I will have a booth there. But Joyce Riley will be there, and Rodney Stitz, and Len Horowitz, and Eric Huffschmidt, and a number of people we've had on our program, or will have on our program. And if you'd like to know more about it, why don't you call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. It's going to be two full days. It's really fascinating. We really enjoyed it last time we were there. And we would mention you can go to their website at conspiracycon.com. That's conspiracycon.com. And also, we are going to have our own special meeting here on November 6th. So put that date aside. That's November 6th. And it's going to be here in the Monterey Bay area. We hope all of you will be able to get to that. And then, of course, we want to remind you about the effort to teach people about the Constitution, and certainly the Institute on the Constitution has put together a wonderful program that will teach you about our Christian history, about Christopher Columbus, and about Cortez. And those of you who've heard our recent program with David Whitney would want to have that information, and you're not going to get it from regular channels, because there's a conscious effort to destroy any realization that freedom comes from God, not from government. They want you to be dependent upon the ruling elite. And, of course, we want to be dependent upon God. If you'd like to know more about the Institute and the Constitution, call 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. Or go to their website, iotconline.com. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and when we're on the air 5 hours a day, reaching out across America, why, we could certainly use help from people who believe that we have a real problem in America. We're not getting the problem, not getting the truth, and tragically, we're moving into World War III. They're going to draft your sons and your daughters. What are you going to say when they do that? There are going to be attacks on America because we're inflaming the entire Muslim Muslim world. We're leaving our borders open so that terrorists and people can come into this country who have no allegiance to our country at all. They don't want to speak our language. They don't want to adopt our cultures. And they want a separate culture. And we cannot exist as a divided nation. So you have to understand this is all planned. It's being funded by the Ford Foundation. And if you'd like to get more information on that, the book, Importing Revolution, or the video we carry, The Conquest of Aztlan, that's the book, Importing Revolution, or The Conquest of Aztlan, we'll go into the background of how the Ford Foundation is funding this whole thing. And you can get that those items by calling 1-800-544-8927. Now, there's an older book, but a very important book, on the Ford Foundation and the Rockefeller and Carnegie Foundations, Foundations, Their Power and Influence. And it will demonstrate to you that there are these people of great wealth who are pushing a Marxist philosophy and trying to destroy the love which every American should have for his way of life. That's what Congressman Reese, who led the Reese Committee, said back in 1957 or 58 when he was quoted. We have the book, we've kept it in print. Foundations, Their Power and Influence is one of the five most important books in my library. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And order Foundations, Their Power and Influence, Importing Revolution, The Conquest of Aztlan. And then we hope that many of you go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and there you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day and not get anything done. You can then pull down the archives, which we have going back about 6 weeks. You can pull down our newsletters, though we'll be glad to send you a free copy of the newsletter. If you just call us at 1-800-544-8927, you can get a free copy of the newsletter, but you can also get them off the internet. We put them up there sometime after we've released them publicly. And then, of course, you can look at the various items we have. We actually carry the Berkey products, and if you buy them through us, a Big Berkey or a Berkey Life, well, you get a free 4-tape set and a free video. You can get any 5 of our videos that we've actually produced for $69.95, a great bargain. It's called the Video Special, and you can get them by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we hope that you'll tell others about our programs, you'll help tell them about our website, and that you'll want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Now, let me suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the Brotherhood of Darkness Special, which is the book, the video, and the audio tape for $29.95. The video, Iraq, the Untold Story. And you'll want to get the syllabus with it, because then you can document that this war and all those boys dying over in Iraq was planned long before the 9/11 attack. It had nothing to do with Saddam Hussein. Read what the other people said, the project for the new American century. And who is the project? Why, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, Liddy, John Bolton. There are only 25 people in this organization. They took over the government, and you can get their material out of our syllabus. You can go to their website, newamericancentury.org. Find out if this is true, and then sound the alarm, ladies and gentlemen. There is an elite, and they have a different worldview, and they really don't believe we should have any rights at all. So help us get the truth out. Help us, of course, make people understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle. Pray for America, pray for revival, because I believe, after studying this for over 40 years, that if America doesn't return to the faith of our fathers, why, we're going to lose America. And America will become a third world nation, and the freedoms we've known will become simply ancient history. And finally, we ask you to pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.